Hello, beautiful people.
Hello.
I want to thank you all for being here. And the title of my talk is Finding Diamonds in the Dirt. I was at a picnic recently, and we got to talking, and they were eating hamburgers and hot dogs, and I had a cup full of vegetables. And the lady said, "Oh, don't you like hamburgers?" And I said, "Yes, I do, but I don't like the bread." And she said, "Why?" And she had recently read my two memoirs. And I said, "Oh, it was probably because of the lady who piled too much food on my plate." And she said, "Oh, I hate her." And I said, "Oh, please don't hate her. I love her." And she thought a minute. She said, "No, still hate her." So for those of you who have not read the book, I'm going to recount two pretty benign examples of how I was treated when I was in this household. The first one was when I got there, her initial way to punish me was to hit me with her hand. She backhanded me within 2 or 3 days of being there. And then backhanding became 2 or 3 days a week, just normal. So even when I wrote my first book, I told her a few of those instances, but I didn't think backhanding me was abuse. I just thought it was, oh, that was the least of it, so that was okay. She then graduated to what she called the Cat of Two Tails. It had a stick wrapped in leather, these little twine things, and then the twine hung down, two of them, and they were knotted. And then she graduated to the belt, her husband's, and then with me, she graduated to the buckle. Sometimes her son, who was 3 months older than I, were in trouble at the same time. And she would swat him with the belt and send him to his bedroom, and then I got the buckle. Nick would start crying the minute he started towards her. "Mama, Mama, don't, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Well, I hadn't cried since I was 9 and I was raped. I didn't know how to cry. I couldn't have faked it. And I think that that's why my beatings lasted longer. She wanted that and I just couldn't give it to her. One time she was hitting me and I don't know what it was about. I don't remember why she was mad. Probably didn't need a reason. And she was just wild with this belt buckle, just hitting everywhere. And somehow I caught it under my arm. And then I was like, "Oh, heck, now what do I do? I didn't want to let it go because there she is." And so I just kind of stood there frozen. Well, she finally jerked, got it up, and it hit the side of my face. And then I noticed that her face, her expression changed. And she said, "Go to the bathroom and clean yourself up." So I turned around and started towards the bathroom, and then I tasted blood in my mouth, and the tongue of the belt had made a hole in my cheek and hit my gum. So it went in. It was bleeding more on the inside than the outside. So I cleaned it up. She came in, handed me a little bitty bandage, and said, "If anybody asks you, you tell them you walked into a tree." I said, "Okay." The second example I want to give is she always overfed me. She made meal times horrible for me. One day I came and there were 2 8-inch sausages with greens, corn, fries, fried apples, and 2 squares of cornbread. But I had just turned 13 and I was wearing a bra. And while I didn't like having boobs, I did like having a pocket. So while no one was watching, I rolled one of the 8-inch sausages in my napkin and put it in my bra. And then when I went outside, her house was up on blocks, and I threw it under the house, and she had 2 dogs. So I thought, problem solved. But it wasn't. I came home 2 weeks later, and even before I hit the back door, I knew it was a bad day, the vibes. I put on my expressionless face, I walked in, and instead of her sitting at the table where the adults ate before Nick and I ate, she was sitting at the bar where Nick and I sat. And she was smoking her cigarette, and I said, "Good afternoon," and she pointed at the table, and I turned around, there was my sausage from 2 weeks ago sitting on a plate, and she said, "Eat it." And I said, "Okay." And I sat down, and I started cutting it in thin little pieces, and I started eating it. And I looked at her, and she was smoking away, sitting with her legs crossed on that stool, looking like she was in the catbird seat. And a little warrior rose up in me, and I thought, how can I make her doubt that this has worked? How can I make her doubt her strategy? So I ate a couple more pieces, and then I looked at her and said, could I have some ketchup? Her face changed into this horrible look, and she goes, you are crazy. There is something wrong with you. You are crazy. And I thought, I'm not the one making a 13-year-old eat a sausage that's been under the house 2 weeks that even the dog wouldn't eat. Who's crazy here? So those are two examples. That's the background. I want to tell you, I never really hated her. I really disliked her at times. But I could not for the life of me figure out what I was doing wrong or what her problem was. And I wanted to be a psychologist or psychiatrist when I grew up, even though she told me I wasn't smart enough. So I've always tried to figure things out. But I have grown to be very, very grateful for everything that happened and everything she taught me, because I really did find diamonds in the dirt. And as I go through some of the diamonds, I'd like you to reflect on when you found these diamonds, or if you found these diamonds, and do you have these diamonds completely? Because I was kicked out on my own at 16, with nobody in back of me, nobody to go to if I was scared or troubled. And I needed these lessons, and I had them at 16. The first diamond that I wrote down is, not all people are good. That sounds obvious, huh? But it isn't something that kids know in their teen years. And I saw lots of my friends who came from pretty good homes fall victim to terrible people because they talked smooth. And I had a radar, and I would say, no, you need to leave him alone. There's something wrong with him. And that when they didn't listen, it always turned out to be true. Those people thought the people were kind, all people, because that's all they'd kind of known, and they gave them second, third, and fourth chances. I don't recommend beating your kids so that they'll have these lessons early, but I'm really, really grateful that I did. I don't trust by default. I was honed to sniff out angry and violent people. An example I have is, I was asked to a prom when I was 15. This guy, he was a muscly guy with a muscle car, and I guess all the girls liked him. I don't know why he asked me, but he asked me to the prom. And we're all sitting at a table with all the little prom couples, and I saw a girl come in with her date that I knew, and I excused myself and said, oh, I'm just going to go talk to so-and-so. And I got up, and I probably took two steps away, and he jerked me back so hard that I thought he'd done something to my shoulder. And I said, what? What's wrong? And he said, when you're my date, you stay with me. You sit with me. You don't go talk to anyone else. And I said, okay. And then we sat down, and I waited 20 minutes, and I excused myself and said I had to go to the restroom. He wouldn't bother me there. And there was a payphone, and I called my foster uncle and asked him to come get me. He said he'd be there in 10 minutes. I went in the bathroom, and I asked a girl who had a watch, I said, 10 minutes, would you tell my date that I have left and I've gone home? And she said, yeah. So that's what I did. The next day, he showed up at my uncle's house, very, very apologetic. I told him why I'd left. I don't like to get jerked around. You can't tell me who I'm going to talk to. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, he said. And I said, I accept your apology. And he said, will you go out with me again? And I said, no, absolutely not. And he said, why not? Why won't you give me another chance? And I said, because your other chance is a chance for you to hurt me. You've already done that, and I'm done. So that was one of the diamonds from the dust that really helped me at 16. Another diamond is, I am resilient and resourceful. Having my back against the wall meant that I became really independent and self-reliant. When the shit hit the fan, there was nobody coming to help me. I had to be my own hero. And let me tell you, no one that grows up like me ends up mooching on their parents or living in their basement till they're 35. We can't wait to get out of there. And I don't settle for unhappy, as evidenced partly by me having 118 jobs. It wasn't that I didn't like all of them, but the ones I didn't like, I got another job and changed because I didn't want to become part of that group who just complained constantly that they hated it and did nothing about it. I thank the lady for this independent spirit that rose up really early in me. Another diamond is I felt compassion from an early age. Kids are kind of egocentric and they think the world revolves around them. Very early, I learned that that's not true, and I could tell when other people were in pain. My learning curve was that I had to learn that I couldn't help everybody that I saw in pain. Sometimes I just had to let them know that I knew and that they could talk to me. But that was a wonderful lesson from the lady. I'm really thankful to have this compassionate eye, and I had it very young. Another diamond is I recognize victim mentality. I knew that I could tell my poor sad story and I'd have sympathy for a day, but it wouldn't fix anything. And I'd seen the adults around me wallow in their own sad stories. My father, I've been in the Navy 30 years and I hated every minute of it. The lady, she was like, oh my God, I wish I could afford all those nice dresses. We could just make more money, you know. So she wasn't poor. She was one of the, we were on the poor side of town, but she was one of the more lower middle class. So I didn't want to be that. And I worked and I worked my way out of that. And that's a diamond from the dirt. Other lessons I've learned, and I learned this from the lady, is that I recognize controlling behavior early. And one of the ways she's controlled was it was her way or the highway. She was so inflexible that she was brittle. She was a closed system, and she only saw her point of view. My father sincerely loved her, and I don't think she could feel it. I think she had just become so full of hate and control that she couldn't. One way that people who are controlling, they separate you from the people you love. She was good at this. Not that I had many loved ones, but she completely removed me from my father. I was to go to her about everything, and I was forbidden to go directly to my father about anything, and it worked. The only words I ever spoke to him were good morning, sometimes when he came through the kitchen early. Even as an adult, she sometimes did not give him the letters I wrote, and she sometimes did not put the cards that he wanted to send me into the post box. But everywhere I moved, and I moved a lot, I sent him a letter with my address, and my roommate said, why do you do this? He didn't even send you a birthday card. Why? And I said, because if we don't have a relationship, it's not going to be because he didn't know where I was. So I was continually laying that in his court. Another form of control is manipulation. And it made the lady feel very powerful. She talked to her son about a dance coming up and get him all excited. And she knew I liked to go and that I liked to dance. And then the day of the dance, she'd find that I did something wrong and I was restricted and Nick went alone. Well, the little warrior would rise up in me again. And a couple times I would convince Nick that there was something so wonderful on TV that he would decide to stay home and tell her he didn't want to go to the dance. And that really made her mad because she wanted me to feel left out. She had no boundaries. And that's another way that controlling people act. She went through my stuff all the time. And I hid the poems in the lining of my suitcase. She went through Nick's things. She steamed open letters from his girlfriends and read them. Even with my father and her husband, if they left their wallets out, she went through them. Another controlling behavior is she was super critical, more so with me, but also with others. Her husband became very quiet and would just walk away without comment when she started on him. Her son would chew the inside of his cheek. My father would try to cajole her, then end up agreeing with her. So even as a young adult, I steered clear of hypercritical people, but those kind of people in this world. And again, at 16, that was very valuable. All these diamonds helped me form good friendships. Another diamond I learned is that adoration can be a trap. My father adored her, and consequently, he squinted his eyes at how she treated me. He was trapped in his adoration. In psychology, this is called cognitive bias. And it, broadly speaking, it means that you lean towards one person while not believing the other one. And that was certainly the way with us. She told him that I had been sexually active since I was 11, and he never defended me. I was in her home 3 different times, and not once did my father ask me how I was. He never asked my side of anything. He utterly believed her. My diamond was deciding that I had to be loved for being me, that I never wanted to be adored and set on a pedestal. In school, we read about Romeo and Juliet, and they loved each other so much they killed each other, deciding they couldn't live without one another. That's adoration, and that's not what I want, and it's not what I got, thank goodness. Another diamond I learned was fear should never be part of a relationship, be that friendship or something deeper. Everyone was afraid of the lady. Everyone scampered to get out of her way, me included. I couldn't figure out if the power was enough for her, if that was what she was feeding on, because I knew she no longer felt love. I think her husband was miserable. He was my father's identical twin brother, and he died of a heart attack at age 48. My father married her 10 months later, but they'd had a thing going since way before that, way before I showed up at the farm. And I often wondered, what kind of twin agreement did they have? Did my uncle say, hey, if you can make her happy, more power to you, and back out? Did he not know? How could he not know? I knew at 11. Did he know and not want to know? I think in today's world, he would divorce her. But back then, divorce was a bad word. And he stayed with her out of fear because they had a son and a farm together. And it literally killed him. The lady had gotten her husband a black recliner because he worked the farm in the daytime. And he got on a tractor all day in the hot sun. And then about 1 o'clock, he'd come in and he'd change, eat lunch, and he'd go to work at the phone company from 3 to 11. And she wanted him to have somewhere where he could just relax. So she got him this black recliner, but then she didn't want his greasy head on it. So she put a towel back there. And she didn't want his sweaty arms on it. So she put towels on the arms. And then pretty soon she didn't want the towels dirty. So this poor man would literally come home and sit in his chair with his head like this, not touching, and his arms in his lap, because he did not want to make her mad. And again, like I said, it literally killed him, that fear. Her son lived in fear. He'd have crying bouts, crying himself to sleep because he was afraid his mother was going to hell because of the beer cans they drank on the big hill on the back 40. And she'd send us to church 3 times a week, and that's what the church told us. My father lived in fear of angering her, so he kowtowed to her. He was afraid that she'd leave him because he loved her much more than she loved him. And he put her on that pedestal, and she was his goddess. And then he wondered, why does she want me? Why would she be with me? I lived in fear, but I stuffed it down where it created havoc. I had migraines and stomach ailments, but I never told the lady because I'd rather go to school sick than stay home. Thank the universe that there was a wonderful nurse who believed that children could get headaches, and she would let me go in there and lay down. I learned early that I did not want a fear-based relationship. Back then, I never thought I'd get married, but I used that adage in all my friendships, and it did me well. I have had and have excellent friends. Another diamond is you can't change other folk. I knew this at 16. You can only change yourself. That was a good lesson, because when I finally got it, I realized I didn't have to try anymore. She didn't like me. She wasn't going to like me. And I didn't have to expend that energy, and it relieved a lot of pressure within myself. Another diamond I learned is mistakes are not bad. They're learning experiences. This one I only learned in rudimentary form at 16. I knew that mistakes were a part of things, but I still beat myself up over them back then. But I also learned at 16 that sometimes mistakes helped me, like in baseball. If I struck out, I had to shake off the anger because I knew it wouldn't help me hit that second ball. I'd shake it off, and I usually did hit the second ball. Another diamond is that emotions do not define me. They're like weather gauges. They tell me how I feel for the day, and there will always be rainy and sunny days. But the biggest diamond of all is that I can love me, even when I think no one else does. And thanks to the lady, I learned this really early. In my second book, I tell the time when I was 12, in the bathtub up to my neck in relaxing hot water. And I was sad because I realized nobody loved me. My mother had disappeared. My father was absent from my life, and the lady hated me. No one loves me, I thought. But somebody has to love me, even if it's only me. All love me, and I made up a little song that I used to whisper myself to sleep with. I'm going to sing it for you now. Somebody loves me, and it's me, just as I am, just as I be. I'm the somebody who loves me. I sang that to myself for the next 12 years or so. It became part of my nighttime routine. That's a huge diamond that the lady gave me, and I absolutely thank her. So if you've read my first two books, please don't hate her. I absolutely love her. And if you're going to read my first two books, when you meet her, don't hate her. I absolutely am grateful to her and love her. And she was one of my best teachers. And isn't that why we're all here? To teach each other? Thank you all.